Welcome to Reading by Candlelight at Molly's Cottage, where we proudly celebrate and promote new Australian writers and their stories. I'm your host, Fiona Taylor. Each episode I chat to an author whose book features in Molly's gorgeous monthly book boxes, along with a selection of handmade items that complement the book setting. Reading by Candlelight would like to acknowledge the deep history and culture of Nipaluna, so I pay my respect to the original owners, the Muin and Aa people. I also pay my respects to all First Nations storytellers and their elders. So light a candle, settle back, and let's meet this month's Reading by Candlelight book box author. Welcome back, Karen Main, to Reading by Candlelight at Molly's Cottage.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's lovely to be back for my second book.
As we've just said, this is Karen's second time here. She was also Reading by Candlelight's March 2023 pick for her absolutely delightful debut, Lenny Marks Gets Away with Murder. And if you haven't read it, then you are missing out. You must read it as soon as possible.
Oh, you're so kind, Fiona.
I love that book so much. And now, only 12 months later, we are together again to talk about your second novel, Joy Moody is Out of Time.
And can you believe this is the first interview I've done about Joy Moody? So I'm extra excited to talk about it.
Oh, my goodness. I think that I was the first person you spoke to about Lenny as well.
Oh, you might have been. Yes. That's
double.
Just 12 months ago, but it also could have been like 27 years ago. Like either way, it feels like it's been a long time.
Because it has been a big year for you, Karen, since we last talked. Readers rightly showed so much love for the quirky and lovable Lenny, and your debut quickly became a bestseller. And I remember telling you on this podcast last year that I expected huge things for you, and that has definitely eventuated.
Maybe you should be a fortune teller. Maybe you've missed your calling.
I think it's got nothing to do with me and got everything to do with the fact that you're so talented.
Oh, because thanks. I'll take that.
Because you were shortlisted for both the prestigious Ned Kelly Award and the Indie Book Awards for Best Debut and picked up to be published in the United States.
Yeah, there's been some very unexpected highlights. Like I'll take all of them, but none of the, like, it's just been an absolute dream publishing journey. I'm incredibly grateful.
I cannot impress upon our listeners enough to just how incredibly amazing it is and totally deserved that you are going to be printed in the US. I don't think you could have hoped for more for your first book.
No, and I expected that it might not be the first book, that, you know, it might be a matter of time. You know, you just keep throwing these things out there and you hope at some point somebody will read it, the right person at the right time, because it's all about timing too. It really doesn't, like, quality of your work's one thing, but you've got to hit it at the right time. If you're writing it slightly soft porn with dragons involved at the moment, you may be on the perfect timing. You're on trend. My book is not about that. But yeah, incredible. Like, couldn't have asked for more.
Now, if you're not following Karen on social media, she lives with her husband and four young children in Melbourne and was a former wedding photographer and still is a police detective.
Yes.
Two professions I feel that uncover both the very best and worst of human nature.
Yeah, absolutely. And much more fun to be a police officer than a wedding photographer.
I can imagine. Not only is she amazingly talented, but she's extremely funny and ridiculously modest because she's still in disbelief that she's actually a published author.
That's true. Yes. Modest, except if you ask anybody I've come across in the past 12 months, because I've somehow managed to work in conversations, including while giving birth to my twins, that my book was being published. So maybe not that modest.
Do you want Karen to start with an elevator pitch for Joy Moody is Out of Time, but with no spoilers?
I'd love to, and I won't have nailed this yet because it's hard, as you know, to encapsulate 90,000 words in a couple of lines. But I'll give a bit of a sum up of it. So Joy Moody runs and lives in a laundromat in the Melbourne Bayside suburbs. She has identical twin girls and she is slowly going mad. And then Joy dies. And that's it. That's my moment. So, and that is not a spoiler. It's on the cover. And it's also Joy Moody is Out of Time, which obviously could have a couple of meanings. But Joy dies and then it's all about how she got to be where she was and why.
Excellent. I think that's
that sum it up. You've read it.
It does sum it up. But I recently read a review that referred to this book as bonkers.
Completely bonkers, I think was the word. Yeah, which I'm okay with.
Highest praise indeed, and I am so miffed that I didn't say it first.
It would have actually made a really good cover quote, I think, in hindsight. And it could be taken, I guess, offensively, but I think it actually sums up the real vibe I was going for in the book. And yeah, the fact that they've read it and that's what they've said. And I think the other review was the Books and Publishing was that it's fantastical at times. And I went, I'm okay with that too, because it is. It's got a time travel element to it. And it's certainly, I haven't switched genres. I'm not in science fiction, but it was definitely meant to be a little bit of a mind trip. Think of it like in that really bizarre scene in Willy Wonka where they go down the river and he sings the weird song. And that's kind of when I think my mum skipped ahead. Because she thought something weird's going on here. I mean, the whole thing's weird, to be honest. But that's kind of where Joy's brain's going, and I wanted to capture that.
But it all makes sense in the end.
I'd like to think so, and I don't love wrapping things up in a really nice, pretty bow, but I think, you know, you can't do that to your readers where you've had them come along on this journey with you and not give them enough answers. So I'm hoping enough answers without it being like just this info dump at the end where you get just all the, you know, all the plot points and all the, or some character doing a monologue where they tell you in detail about how every red herring has panned out.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask was, I'm fascinated by what prompted the plot of the story, because let's be honest, it, as we've said, it is a bit kooky, which is not as good a word as bonkers, but
no,
I just didn't want to steal. I didn't want to steal somebody else's thunder.
Fair enough.
So, what prompted the plot?
Okay, so I got a bit into laundromats, and a lot of it came from a photo that was by Mrs. White Photography, or Mrs. White Photos. I think that's her handle on Instagram. She takes a lot of photos of Zoe Foster Blake, who is my girl crush, my absolute girl crush. She can do no wrong. And that was of a couple of washing machines with flowers spilling out of them. And I went, God, you've made something really simple and mundane you walk past every day kind of look beautiful. And I went, I really like it, but it's just a photo of washing machines, like weird. Anyway, I think it must have sunk into my head somehow. And this shop came to me first, and the shop was a pink laundromat, and it was called Joyful Suds. And I went, what could possibly happen in this shop that fits the crime genre, that's got a bit of quirkiness to it? And then Joy was born, because obviously Joy's named the laundromat Joyful Suds, semi after herself. And then I had identical twins, so that was a no-brainer. That was going in the book. And I was probably going a bit mad, and so, you know, there was probably a bit of a semi-autobiographical you know, spin on it. But then the sort of the way in which she starts to go a little bit mad with the time travel element, I think what I wanted was, Lenny had like some quirky elements to her. I didn't want it to just to be a straight whodunit. I didn't want it just to be you know, sort of anything run of the mill. I needed it. I wanted it to have that completely bonkers aspect to it. And so, yeah, I put the time travel in, which was actually really almost difficult to do, because then you're walking this line of, you don't want somebody to read the prologue or the first chapter and go, oh, that's not my genre. So it has to be really clear that we're not about to, you know, launch off in the DeLorean, which you know what the DeLorean is, don't you, Fiona? From Back to the Future. Yes. Yes. Right. So I've made that joke many times at work, in police work, where people are a lot younger than me there now, because they're coming through, you know, they're 18, 19, 20, and they look at me blankly because they have no idea what Back to the Future, Marty McFly, no, or the DeLorean is. And it's a disgrace. And I think I'm going to have to work it into a book. It needs to stay in it needs to stay as pop culture, like the Back to the Future, you know, Marty McFly. Anyway, there's no actual time travel. There's no science fiction. But I just, once I clicked on that, and I can't remember what it was that put me in that, oh, she'll believe they're time travelers. It just went, I just went, that is it. That's like the pieces have just slotted together perfectly. So, yeah, I'm not sure how it happened, but you know, when you're just workshopping things and they're ticking over in your mind and you go, that is a great piece of the puzzle. And generally I don't write them down, because if it's a good enough piece of the puzzle, I will remember it. That's my theory on it. So I won't write it down. I have no fear of forgetting it, because if it is important enough, I will remember it.
Oh, that's impressive.
Does that mess with your brain? Do you like to write things down?
I write things down because I'm 60.
You are the youngest 60-year-old I've ever met, Fiona. I think they stuffed up your birth date.
I'll tell my parents.
Yeah, good. Let them know.
It's only been 12 months, like we said, since your debut hit the shelves. How does it feel to have another book published so soon?
Great, but it was a slog. Like, I'm not going to make it sound like the second book was any easier than the first. In some ways, harder. I had less time, but I also had an editor and I had a contract. So I knew I could send it safely to my editor. And as long as she liked the bones of it, we were good. Like, as long as she accepted the premise, we could work on it together. And I got it in a good enough shape that I was happy to send it off. But yeah, as opposed to Lenny Marks, where, you know, it was writing in the cracks of time and it took me a couple of years, this took me 6 months to get a draft that I was happy to send on to my editor that I didn't think was going to embarrass me.
Wow, 6 months is so impressive.
It was quick, but then you've got to remember it was like, so it wasn't the first draft. It was still probably the sixth or seventh draft. And I was on maternity leave at the time. So I had a heap of time on my hands because I only had newborn twins. I am joking if any parents are listening to this. There is no time on your hands. There is absolutely no time. But I did try and prioritize it again. Like I wanted to keep that momentum up.
Now, as you just said that you had newborn twins at the time and you have four young children and I love
– not on top of twins, like four in total.
Four in total.
I'm not Kate Solly.
But I love, as you said, that Joy Moody has twins because you have young twin girls, except they don't come from the future as far as I know.
Well, I can't tell you. Because like it's top secret, you know what though? It was such a different book when I, and I think this is the way with most people. My outlining is my first draft, so I'm not. And I mean, I've only written two books. I've got a third one underway, but this is the way I feel like it works for me. My first draft is my outline, so it's not. I know it's not readable in that format, but that gets me everywhere I need to go so I can go, yeah, the start works with that end or whatever. So, but the first iteration of this, it was so much more about, because I was so fascinated by the fact my twin girls and any identical twins, they are the same DNA. They are genetically identical, different fingerprints, but genetically identical. So I got really hung up on what a great crime, you know, unless you're committing the crime as identical twins, how could you ever, and in a criminal court, you only need to prove it. You have to prove it beyond reasonable doubt. So you only need a sliver of possible doubt to get somebody acquitted for something. So if you've got an identical twin and nobody can actually put either of you at one place at the time of, you know, X's murder, how could you? You can't just charge two people with murder because one of you might have done it. It's got to be, you know, it's got to point at someone. So I was really hung up on the fact that these girls could murder their mother, which I'm not saying is what happened, but they could murder their mother or somebody. And how would you ever, you could DNA test it. They could have all the DNA everywhere. How would you ever say which one it was? So I was really right into that. And then rightly so, my gorgeous publisher at Penguin, Bev, said, this sounds a bit grim. Grim, I remember her words being, this sounds a bit grim. Could you make it a bit more uplifting like Lenny Marks? And so I kind of looked back and I went, oh, yeah, I've gone pretty dark here. I've gone pretty heavy. So after we had that conversation, which was so great, like it did start turning wheels in my head. And so it became more of a, and this is a pun that I will no doubt use often, but it became a bit more of a joyful book. Even though it had joy in it, even though joy dies, it became a bit more joyful and all the better for it, I think.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the humour in it is just brilliant and it gives it a levity that's quite, you know, it's going to be an overused word when it comes to your books, but it is, it's quirky. So, and I think that that's what people loved in Lenny. And even though it's not done in the same way in Joy Moody, they're still going to recognize that it's coming from the same place, which I think is brilliant. And every writer who knows I'm talking with you today has insisted I ask you this question.
Okay.
With four young children, including young twin girls, how on earth do you find time to write?
Look, that is an excellent question that I have no excellent answer for. other than that, I love it. That there was times where I did drop my bundle and I noted this down, and I've got to find the notebook I put them all in because I probably hid it so that nobody knew the true extent of my crazy, because you've got to dole that out in pieces. Just got to let people in bit by bit. Where like I thought like, okay, well, I'm just sleep deprived. This makes no sense. You know, like there's so many times where I just went, give it away, Karen. Like you've written one, you're never going to be able to complete another one. Just ask for an extension. Don't fool yourself. The time, I don't think it doesn't matter. Four kids, one kid, no kids. Like if I didn't have kids, I'd be working full time. So how would you fit it in then? Like you make the time for the things you want to do. I don't go to the gym because I don't want to. But if I wanted to, I'm sure I'd make the time. You know, like it's those sort of things. The people that get up and exercise at 4 a.m., well, that would be me writing. And you don't need 8 hours to get the words down. And I think when I type, I'm quite quick. So I can smash out a quick 1,000 words and then just like go, okay, well, that's it. That's it for the day. Those words will not stay that way. They will, might not even make the cut. But all of it is getting towards knowing my characters better, knowing what's going on. And then when it's down to, you know, editing more, I do need a good 2 or 3 day run at it just to keep the momentum. So when my husband is very supportive, he doesn't have a lot of choice because I'm very much in the feminist mindset of, well, this is work. So if you're away for work, I can be like, you know, yeah. We're a team though.
That's right.
So I did take 2 nights for this one, and I went to Wombat, the Burrow at Wombat Bend, I think it's called. Sisters in Crime have it advertised now, but my friends had bought me a voucher for it, and that was before I was having twins. And I went, well, I'll never be able to use that. And I thought, no, I have to use that, and I have to get this done, and I can sit at home and go bonkers. There's that word again. Or I can just go away 2 nights, smash out as much as I can, because all that precious time where you finally built up your momentum and you're getting, and then it's dinner time, yes, and bath time and bedtime. And then by the time you get back after doing the dishes, you're like, well, it's 8:30. I just want to sit down and I want to watch Selling Sunset. Like I'm done. So I have been lucky in that way because we could afford for you know, me to go away, and we could, you know, like I don't find it particularly easy to walk away from my family. It does still get, I still get very guilty. I still get a lot of anxiety about it, but it's still work and important to me. And also I think I'm a better mother for taking that time. It's not a great answer, but I think, you know, a few words a day, like, and you've got yourself a book. And I just think anybody, if you want to do it, like just force your children to leave you alone somehow. Get a better lock on your door. Sit in your car. I don't need, because I think about it all the time in between. So if I sit down and I've got 20 minutes, I'll write for 20 minutes. I don't need to warm up. I don't need to get myself in the zone. It's like 20 minutes. Okay, that'll do for today.
A lot has been said about the pressure of writing a follow-up novel to a bestseller. So did Lenny's popularity with readers make it harder or easier to write Joy?
Yeah, harder. Mm-hmm. For the best reasons. Like, isn't it confusing? Should it be easier? I don't know. But it was that Lenny Marks was so well received. People have loved her. She has resonated with people on such a personal level.
Yes.
And if you pick up Joy Moody, she's certainly not the same character. Nor should she be, because it's a completely different book. But maybe some people will be disappointed by that, or not. Maybe they're ready for a different character. I wasn't it's not in my mind at all to do a sequel for Lenny. And Joy, I think I really wanted Lenny's flawed in a very lovable way. Joy, I think, is flawed in more of a morally questionable way.
Yeah.
So that will divide some people. But I'm okay with that. I kind of wanted that conversation starter, especially around parenting, especially motherhood. People are very judgmental around mothering choices, mothers especially. Dads, I don't think, get that same level of unsolicited feedback from people. And so I wanted very much to, I guess, harp on that point as well.
No, I think it's brilliantly done. And I think that if you came out with somebody too similar to Lenny, it doesn't make it a different book. And yeah. I mean, Joy doesn't have to have any of the characteristics of Lenny, but the book needed to have characteristics of Karen Maine. And you've done that.
I like how you've summed that up, and I will use that going forward. That is going to be something I say. It's my characteristics people like as an author rather than the characters that you like. Yeah, I guess that's it.
And you have created a brilliant cast of fabulously quirky characters. And I love them all. And the dynamic between Joy and her twins was equally hilarious and hard.
Good. I'm glad you liked it. I hoped it sort of summed up. It's probably still a little bit of a, you know, glossy view on parenting, in that they do still listen to her and do what she says some of the time.
So did Joy come to you fully formed?
No, Joyful Suds very much did. Joy didn't, and she was less, she was a lot, it was, like I said, it was a grimmer book when I first pitched it and thought of it. And so she was a lot more of a, sort of a bit of an uncontrollable tyrant, much more of a dictator in that house than a mother. So this way she's just a mother with maybe some very interesting ideas about parenting and her children's lives, but ultimately is all, you know, she's their mother. She loves them.
And a lot of her decisions come from fear.
Yes, fear. And
every mother can relate to that. Every mother can, every parent can relate to that, because sometimes you react from fear for your child before you actually form your response in your head, and it's just a gut reaction. And I feel that she just has those constantly.
Yeah, I think so too. And then she's probably got that stubbornness where then she sort of locks herself into it, and then she, you know, you dig yourself a deeper hole than you need to, whereas you know, you come clean sometimes, and this will all make sense for people once they read the book. But yeah, she's dug herself a hole, and rather than getting out of it early in the piece, she's just kept on digging. And I think we've all probably been in a similar position like that. And it's also interesting about what people deem acceptable lies for your children. So hopefully nobody too young is listening to this, and this won't ruin their lives. Santa, for instance, that is an acceptable lie to tell your children. In fact, if you're the parent standing there, and I've got a daughter in grade one now, if you're the parent standing there going, "Oh, no, we don't do Santa in our house. The presents just come from us." People, I can imagine, because we don't say that, but I'm imagining my, like, view on it too. I'd be like, "Oh, you monsters." You know, like, why can't they have Santa? Why can't they have the stranger coming into their house in the middle of the night into their bedrooms? Like, what is wrong with that? I mean, you know, it's problematic. You know, likewise Tooth Fairy, likewise Easter Bunny, like, they're nice lies. They're for Joy. They're for childhood memories. But what's to say that's right? You know, what's to say Joy's not right in what she does? So I think it's all, yeah, that sort of socially acceptable, you know, you go with the group mentality, and when you go against it, sometimes people look at you funny. Joy doesn't care. Like, you know, she's got her opinions, and she's sticking with them.
For better or worse.
Yes, for better or worse.
Now, which one of them do you think you'd enjoy hanging out with the most?
Which character?
Yeah.
Out of Joy or Lenny or any of the characters?
Oh, all of them.
I really like Monty in this book. I love him. So he's the neighbour. He's Joy's neighbour. You know this, but I'll explain. He's Joy's neighbour, and he's an older bloke. He's a locksmith. He plays chess. He grows orchids. Like, he's just drinking many cups of tea a day. He's just living his quiet, best life. And I think Monty and I probably could sit in the shop window together. He could teach me how to play chess, because I love a board game, but I don't know how to play chess. He could teach me how to play chess, and we could probably solve all the problems of the world. So Monty, I think. Joy might be a bit highly strung for me.
Oh, gosh, yes. Mine was Monty as well. I wanted to hang out with Monty because I thought that he'd have a few really great stories to tell.
Wouldn't he? Yeah.
He loves cats.
Yes.
Birds.
Yes.
So why? And he loved Joy, and I think that just says everything about him as a man, because she wouldn't be an easy person to love.
No. See, so I could drop my washing off to Joy, and then I could go next door and hang out with Monty. That would actually be an ideal day out. I'd be okay with that.
And Monty has such a big heart, and after seeing Boy Swallows Universe, I think Brian Brown would play him perfectly.
I did love Brian Brown, but you know who I liked more, male characters in that? I really loved Simon Baker in it.
Oh, he was brilliant. Oh, he could be Monty as well.
He could be Monty. He might be still a bit too young, but he seemed a lot older in Boy Swallows. I don't know if that was makeup or just the way he looks now. But I loved him. And as a father, a very flawed father, He was just beautiful. Like, he was really lovely in that.
Oh, it was brilliant. All of them were brilliant.
Oh, that series was like,
it was Charlton's perfection.
he just touches, like, everything he touches magic. It's amazing. Oh,
I know, but he's that type of person in real life too. He's just, everything is so on the surface and emotional and heartwarming and just gorgeous person who wrote a gorgeous book and then they made it into the perfect series.
And good on him. Like, from everything I've seen of him, I'm like, yeah, good on you. That should happen to you. That's lovely. Have you met him?
Oh, yes, I've met him. He's lovely.
I would love future goals, a cover quote from Trent Dalton. I'd love that.
Oh, we're putting it, we're manifesting it now, putting it out into the universe. Trent Dalton will give you a cover quote for your next book.
Yeah. Or else I'll get him arrested by interstate police. No, I wouldn't. I would never. I don't have that sort of power. I could in Victoria, though, when he's on tour. So
that is staying in. That is so much fun.
It should. I mean, it's not, it's a veiled threat, but, you know. And if Trent listens to this, like, just get ahead of the curve. Like, why risk it? Just get in contact with me. You know, I'm Karen Main, author on the socials, and just offer to do that cover quote. You don't even have to read the book, Trent. You just give me a quote. Completely bonkers, and that sums up the author and the book. It would be fine.
If Trent Dalton listens to this, I'll be dead. Like,
yeah, I know. I think we'd both be dead.
It's a bit like, you know, meeting Taylor Swift.
put that out there too. Trent Dalton, listen to the Reading by Candlelight podcast, specifically this episode. He's got to listen to something.
I'll tag him in it. Now, speaking of detectives, was it fun to write from the point of view of your detective Holiday Betts? And can I just say that her name was fabulous.
Isn't it fabulous? I know. Very happy with her name, so much so I want to make her a character in the next one. No, it was not fun at all. I hated it. I do not like writing police scenes. And that was actually, when I edited it, one of the things that came back, or when I got my first or second round of edits, whatever it was, one of the things that came back was, could we have another couple of Holiday Betts scenes? And I went, no. And they took me the longest. And the police aren't the heroes in my books. That's a real intentional choice. And therefore, I want them to miss things, not catch people. You know, like, I don't want them to be the world's greatest coppers, but I also really liked Holiday Betts. And so I would have been like, it was a very confusing period of time writing that. So no, I didn't like it. There'll be no police procedural anytime soon.
I'm very excited to hear that she's going to be in the next book.
Well, at the moment she is, and whether or not my editor will go, listen, this isn't a Holiday Betts series, like, calm down. I did have a couple of crossover characters in this. I don't know if you noticed any.
Yes, I did. I did notice.
Good. Good. I'll leave that for the readers to find.
I loved the mix of tones in Lenny, and I think it's astounding that you managed to do it again with Joy Moody is out of time. It's a perfect mix of light and dark, and while the story is sometimes humorous and it's often emotional, it's perfectly balanced against the suspense of the crime and the mystery that surrounds the twins. There's so much going on, people. do you find balancing the humour against the emotion in the story difficult, or is that something that comes to you naturally?
I think in the initial version, like first draft, it's not really very humorous. And then when I go back and I'm rewriting it, that's the sort of thing. I don't have to work hard to inject it, I don't think, but it's not forefront of my mind at first. It's just getting the bones of the story out. Humor, I do find I use in a lot of high tension situations. Like, personally, if shit's going down, I'm probably the one making a joke about it. And that's not necessarily always a great thing. But I think that that's then what happens. That's mirrored in my book. So if something's getting a bit too intense, a bit too much, I'll throw in something not slapsticky, but like, I just want to, you know, take it down a notch. But sometimes you need to be like all about the emotion and the tension and stuff. But at the heart of it, I still want people to, like, you know, be able to take the foot off and just go, oh yeah, that's like, of course you'd say that if that was what was happening to you.
Now, at Reading by Candlelight, you know we love supporting and promoting Australian authors. Can you recommend a book by an Australian author that you've read recently and would recommend?
Absolutely. So it's just come out in January, and I am doing a talk with her this week. So depending on when this comes out, this will be Been and Gone. This will be Been and Gone. That's good English. Elizabeth Coleman. So her second book, which is A Dance with Murder, which I love. And I also love Elizabeth, who I've only been, like I've been at one event where she's been there, and I just found her entertaining and refreshing and just this delightful person. And she's also a really good writer. So that's her second book about her private investigator, Edwina Bristol, Ted. So she likes girls with boys' names too. I've got Lenny and then I've got Andy in this book. She's got a Ted. And I've also, I'm going to give you two, because so that's already out, and then one yet to come is another soon-to-be-published Penguin author, which is Anna Johnson, or Johnston, I think, and her book is The Borrowed Life of Frederick Fife.
Oh, I've read about that. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, and I've had the privilege of getting to read it in advance, and it's a really lovely, like you just want to put Fred in your pocket and... It was just a lovely read. Like you would not walk away from that book, not a slightly happier person.
No, I love a cozy crime. Now we're going to do a fast 10 to finish up, and which I have not given you a heads up on.
Oh, I like that.
It's much more fun for me. And just say whatever pops into your head.
Okay.
Let's go. Coffee, tea, or neither?
Coffee.
What's something about you readers don't know? More unusual, the better.
You know what? The first thing that pops into my head is I once was on Deal or No Deal holding a suitcase, not as a model, but like as a contestant. So I held a suitcase and but I didn't get to win any money. I was just there and I had to guess what was in my suitcase.
Did not see that coming. Name a living author you'd love to meet.
We'll go Trent Dalton because I've spoken about him and given him high praise.
Manifesting it. What was the last TV show you binged watched?
Fargo.
Oh, okay.
We love Fargo, and it was season 5, and it's got Juno Temple in it, who was in Ted Lasso, putting on a Minnesotan accent. Love that. Oh, very violent, very quirky, brilliant show.
Favourite snack while writing?
Pretzels.
Do you have an unpublished first manuscript lurking in a drawer somewhere?
Yes.
Does the Fortress trilogy of books that Joy loves exist in real life?
No, and I had to rename it because I'd named it something that did exist in real life.
That's funny. Are you a plotter or a pantser?
Pantser.
Favourite book as a child?
So it's a book that, like, so child, like it would have been like late primary school, was called Rocco, R-O-C-C-O, and it was by Cheryl Jordan, and Cheryl has an S at Cheryl. And quite often I search it on eBay to see if I can get a copy because mine's disappeared. And I would have read a lot of books as a kid, but for some reason that one sticks in my mind as a book that I really loved, but I don't have a copy, and it's probably terrible. Like, you know, when you reread things and you go, what was I thinking? But at the time, yeah, and I still think about it and I still remember exactly who wrote it.
What's next for Karen Main?
Sleep. Could I sleep? That'd be really good. No, look, our third book is underway, which I have yet to discuss with anybody the plot of, so I will keep that tight-lipped, but crime, still crime, and hopefully upkill, where, you know, it's a bit uplifting, but a bit killy. Hopefully many more books to come. My kitchen's being renovated, so personal life, I'll have a new kitchen and a new book in the next, you know, few weeks. So things are good.
Just so that everybody knows at home, Karen is at the moment doing this interview in her car because her kitchen is being renovated. So, you know, that's going above and beyond.
I feel like this will be where a lot of this third book may be written because some of the libraries don't open. This is Patterson Lakes Library, and most days it doesn't open till 2 p.m. You know, as a parent of young children, I've lived a long day before 2 p.m. But I am finding more and more places that making life easier to write in, including some of the very generous people. Like, so one of the school mums has said to me, we're not home during the day. If you need somewhere to write and you need just to get out of your house, pop around the corner and type at my house. Like, people are just, I know, they're just lovely. They're just kind. I know. She probably wants a mention in the book or something, and that's fine. And also my books aren't her genre because she loves a fantasy. She wants dragons. So unless I start bringing dragons on the scene, she might not let me carry on that writing in her house thing. But just people are lovely. So there's always somewhere to go.
Now, I could talk to you all day, Karen. Really enjoyed talking with you. But to finish up, I am going to do my best to embarrass Karen, who is really incredibly modest about her writing, no matter what she says. I loved Lenny so much, and I was hoping that you could pull off a second book that was as charming and as quirky as your debut, and you hit it out the park. No, you just did. And I know that you think that that's nice, but In Joy Moody Is Out of Time, you've crafted another gem of a book with fabulously quirky characters and a page-turning mystery. And as soon as I finished reading it, I contacted you.
And that was such a lovely message you sent. And it is hard because you hear nice things, and it's always hard to know how to respond because it's not like you're going, oh, nice hair, and I can go, yours too. Like, you know, you tell me these things and I can't go, you too. I will be able to soon because I see your word count going up and up. But thank you. And it was a slog. I wanted to create a complete standalone book that readers would hopefully still love and have that same quirky voiciness in it. I'm really proud of this book, and there was a lot going on in my house when I wrote it. And so that kind of makes me extra proud because I just think fathers are great, but mothers, I think, we just get shit done. Like we are quite incredible when we need to be. And this brings my heart joy to write books. Oh, there we go. I've put joy in there again. No, this is where joy came from because it's obviously on my mind, you know, create joy. So I'm wrapped, and I hope that I can just carry on doing it and one day just be writing, you know, living my best life, reading advanced copies of things and writing. So thank you for reading. And thank you for your support and your kind words. And this is why I keep coming back to speak to you, because you say all the nice things.
But they're true things, because I cannot lie to people. You know, if I didn't like it, I would have just ghosted you.
No interview for the March book box because the book is terrible. That's where it would have gone. It
would have been me.
Fair enough.
Congratulations, because you wrote something that was so brilliantly quirky, delightfully kooky, and yes, I'm going to have to say it, absolutely joyous to read. It's such a triumph of a book, and I wish you every success going forward because you absolutely deserve it.
Thank you, Fiona. You're so kind.
And I cannot wait to read what you write next. And if you need a sidekick for your US tour, call me. I'm there for you.
All right. You know, you'll hook me up with the right coloured nails for all the events. Yeah.
That's right. Check out Karen's website or Instagram for all her upcoming events promoting Joy Moody Is Out of Time. And listeners can subscribe to Reading by Candlelight at Molly's Cottage to secure Karen's book box with a signed copy of Joy Moody Is Out of Time, a paired beverage, a seed paper bookmark, a delicious surprise, and one of Molly's beautiful hand-poured candles. So thank you, Karen Main, for your time today, and also for being Reading by Candlelight's book box author for March. I'm absolutely convinced Joy Moody Is Out of Time will be just as loved by readers who loved Lenny, and you have an amazing career ahead of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. And I fear that I am out of time with the book boxes because, you know, two books and now I'm on my own. You're onto other Aussie authors.
I know. It's so sad when we have to say this is the last one that we can do with you because we only do first and seconds, but it's a thriving, wonderful industry in Australia, and we hope to try and support and promote as many authors as possible, but you never stop being a Reading by Candlelight author.
Well, this is true. No, and I'm all for it, the debut and the second time around authors. Absolutely, get the support behind them. Otherwise, you'd have the same book. You'd have the same authors every year. So, yeah, no, all for it. And also I bought my friend's one of the boxes. She got Jo Dixon's book and she sent me a video of opening it and she was over the moon. She was so delighted. They just make such a beautiful gift, you know, and a signed book. Like, people love that. Like, they can't get enough of it. So they're great for gifts. Do that.
Thank you. And to all our beautiful Reading by Candlelight community, goodbye. And until next time, and may your candles glow brightly, and happy reading.
Thank you for visiting Molly's Cottage, home of the Reading by Candlelight book box, the only book box subscription that supports emerging Australian authors and their stories. head to Molly's website, mollyscottage.com.au, or follow her and Reading by Candlelight on socials.